All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a crossover Wednesday where the Locked On Raiders host, your boy Q, Keon Myers, is joining me to preview this upcoming Week 12 matchup between the Falcons and Raiders.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's Locked On Falcons is presented by Pepsi, made for football watching. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So, guys, it's me, Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong, on Twitter, at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And today is a crossover Wednesday. We're coming at you a day early because of the Thanksgiving holiday here in the States. And, you know, for the 5% of you that are non-Americans listening to the podcast, you know, shout out to you for just a regular week late in November. But here in the U.S., if you did not know, Thanksgiving's a pretty big deal. Certainly, I think my favorite holiday, you know, I might have to sit there and think about it. You know, 4th of July is pretty fun. Cinco de Mayo is pretty fun. You know, I'm a big fan of drinking holidays. You know, those have always been where my bread is buttered. But anyway, sorry to distract from that. But today's episode, you know, we're not going to be talking about drinking, although, you know, watching Dirt Cutter in the offense might force you to drink sometimes. But today's episode, we're going to be focusing on this upcoming Week 12 matchup between the Falcons and Raiders with your boy Q of the Locked On Raiders podcast. And he's going to be coming on and we're going to talk quite a bit about sort of, you know, this Raiders team that seems to be hitting its stride as it's getting into the second half of the season, coming off of a disappointing but you know, impressive loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, at least relative to what you saw from the Falcons this past week against the Saints. And we're going to get into that coming up. But first, we're going to give thanks to three Falcon players in all three phases of the game. Just three guys that I just don't think get enough love or are deserving of more recognition. And we'll kick things off with the offensive side and giving thanks to left tackle Jake Matthews. He gave up a sack to Trey Henderson this past Sunday. He did get beat, but that was a play where the ball should have come out. And that sack is more on Matt Ryan than it is Jake Matthews. And that was a play, along with maybe one or two others, where Matthews did give up some pressure this past weekend. But relative to several others on the offensive line, I thought he had one of the better games and was solid for the most part. And he continues to get unrecognized by Falcon fans by and large. He shut down Bradley Chubb going into the bye week. And, you know, Bradley Chubb's a player that has more pressures than Myles Garrett this year. And Myles Garrett's a player that is a front runner to be defensive player of the year candidate. And, you know, with Jake Matthews, it's interesting because it feels like he doesn't get enough love. And it's in part due to high expectations and whether those expectations are based off of the fact that his dad is a Hall of Famer, the fact that he was a top 10 pick, the nature of playing offensive line and playing left tackle, that, you know, it raises expectations. The fact that he got paid a lot of money and was one of the highest paid offensive tackles at the time when he got that contract extension a couple of summers ago, or simply because people are holding a grudge against him because of some mistakes he made in a game several years ago that happened to be played in February. You know, I've heard them all. I've seen them all the grudges that people have, but want to say thanks to Jake Matthews for just being a solid player and not getting enough love. Moving to the defensive side of the ball, AJ Terrell's the guy that I'm thankful for. You know, he's shown himself to be one of the few keepers on the defense beyond sort of the guys that we already knew about, guys like Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones. You know, Terrell's far from perfect this year, but I think he's quieted a lot of the doubters that said the Falcons reached on him in the first round. He's been graded above players like Jeff Okuda and C.J. Henderson as one of the top rookies according to Pro Football Focus grades this season. You know, I don't know if he's going to be that sort of elite number one corner that can go toe-to-toe and lock down some of the elite wide receivers league-wide that we saw, you know, Desmond Trufant be at the peak of his prime. But, you know, I think Terrell has certainly shown the upside to be a quality number one corner that you can at least feel confident, you know, can hold his own against some of the top wide receivers in the NFL. And he can continue to show that moving forward this season. Because of the Pro Football Focus grades, you know, I think there's going to be a push from Falcon fans that, you know, he should be considered to be a Defensive Rookie of the Year candidate. You know, I don't expect him to get much consideration there unless he can get a lot more on-ball production. He has one interception, two pass breakups so far this year. And that's fine if you're a shutdown shadow corner like a Jalen Ramsey. And, you know, that's what Jalen Ramsey's production has been, one interception, two pass breakups. And you could certainly argue that, you know, the Falcons would be better served utilizing Terrell in that manner more, as they did in that Vikings game where he was often tasked with covering Adam Thielen. And for the most part, did a great job making sure that Thielen really was a non-factor in the majority of the game. But in terms of those Defensive Rookie of the Year sort of considerations, you know, I don't think he's going to get as much love unless he can increase that on-ball production, particularly when you compare him to a player like Jalen Johnson with the Bears, who has 13, you know, pass breakups this year, which is like fifth best in the NFL so far. So I think those things are going to give a guy like Johnson will probably a little bit more love from voters and national media by and large than Terrell does. But I'm still very thankful for what, you know, Terrell has been doing so far this year. And I think his future is certainly bright. And, you know, we're talking about Jalen Johnson being one of the top producers in the NFL. And another guy, at least the guy I'm thankful for on special teams, is one of the top producers in the NFL in that capacity. No, we're not talking about Younghoe Koo. We're talking about Jacob Tua and a Mariner. And I remember at the beginning of the season, I was a bit upset to see my guy from Pitt, Quadri Olison, get deactivated, you know, and basically has been inactive for all but two games so far this season, because I thought Olison would carve out a significant role on special teams and be a four-core special teams player for the Falcons this year. But the player that's primarily replaced him in that role has been Jacob Tua and Mariner as that one of those four core special teams players, along with guys like Sherrod Neesman. And what's interesting is, you know, Pro Football Focus has him with eight special teams tackers, which is like tied, at least by their tally, for the second most in the NFL. And, you know, he's been a solid player on special teams. He's been a solid player on defense as well. You know, I don't think he gets appreciated as much because, you know, when you play edge for a lot of fans and media, it's all about, you know, how many sacks you get. And if you don't get sacks, you're a bad player. But, you know, JTM, as he's affectionately known, has been a solid run defender. He'll occasionally get you a pressure. You know, he had a pretty good game. I think his best game was arguably the Denver game in terms of generating pressure. And you can even see him be effective dropping in the coverage. And I know he's slimmed down last year, and it seems like he's continued to slim down. I know he's listed as a defensive tackle, listed at 285 pounds, but my guess is he's probably closer to 270 and is really more of an outside linebacker. So I'm thankful for JTM for being a solid role player on this team and really being an impactful player as far as special teams is concerned. And also, you know, when, you know, his number is called on defense, has been stepping up and contributing there as well. So there are the things, the three players that I am thankful for. And we're going to continue today's Locked On Falcons Crossover Wednesday episode by getting into my conversation with your boy Q of the Locked On Raiders podcast coming up. And we're going to preview this upcoming Week 12 matchup between the Falcons and Raiders. But before we get there, we know that, you know, this week is going to be a tough one for people maintaining their diet and trying to lose weight. But we know another key component of losing weight is exercise. And when it comes to getting in shape or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling you get when you feel like you've accomplished something, whether that's hitting your fitness goals or feeling great about yourself. And Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their all new Stride Smart treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your own home. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily, live, and on-demand studio-level classes, always available when you need them. Unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone, and one membership lets up to 5 family members all work out at the same time. Right now, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Just go to echelonfit.com/NFL. That's E-C-H-E-L-O-N fit.com/NFL. So protecting your family and home is your number one priority, and you want to do so safely. And the people at Taser believe that safer self-defense is better self-defense. Taser's line of non-lethal self-protection devices, including the Taser Pulse Plus, are small, they're lightweight, you can carry them on you, in your glove compartment, or in your purse, yet they're powerful enough to incapacitate any attacker. Guns carry unnecessary risks for you and those around you, and even pepper spray can harm you just as much as any attacker. And Taser products like the Taser Pulse Plus are safer. They're easy to use. They use an electrical charge to immobilize attackers for up to 30 seconds, 6 times longer than similar law enforcement issued devices, allowing you time to escape. And thanks to features like laser assisted targeting in the emergency dispatch, Taser will send a response team to your GPS location upon firing. Taser is available without a permit in most U.S. states. Get the Taser Pulse Plus at taser.com with promo code NFL. Save 15% now at taser.com with promo code NFL. That's TASER.com, promo code NFL. Restrictions apply. See site for details. So I know a lot of you guys will be out shopping on Black Friday, but make sure you don't miss Friday's Locked On Falcons episode, which will be a Q&A episode where you'll get all your Falcons questions answered, or non-Falcons questions answered, along with those great deals. Make sure you submit your question early at Locked On Falcons on Twitter or Facebook, or you can shoot an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. So everyone, welcome to a crossover episode coming at you a little bit early this week in light of the holidays. Of course, I'm Aaron Freeman, joined by your boy Q of the Locked On Raiders podcast. And we're going to be talking about this upcoming week 12 matchup between the Falcons and Raiders. Q, my friend, how are you doing today?
Man, doing really, really well, man. Coming off a disappointing loss to the Kansas City Chiefs in prime time Sunday Night Football. It was a heck of a game, but the Raiders came out on the wrong end of it. And I know the Falcons coming off a loss to the Saints. So two teams that are looking for victories on Sunday. Should be a fun game, man. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, but I think even though both teams lost on this past weekend, you know, the Raiders looked pretty good in that Chiefs loss. Falcons did not look particularly good in their loss to the Saints. So it'll be interesting to sort of see if one of those teams raises their level of play this weekend and the other team lowers it. I think obviously the Raiders are in the fight for the playoffs. The Falcons are essentially just trying to throw wrenches into various teams' season so far. But sort of jumping right into it, you know, the thing I've noticed about the Raiders is they're very good on the road this year. They're 4-1 on the road so far. You know, what is it that you're seeing from this team that makes them so effective in their ability to show up on the road?
You know, that's a really good question. And, you know, I kind of look across the league and say, man, there's a lot of teams that are doing really well on the road. I think a lot of it has to do with no fans in the stands, or if there are fans, very limited amount of fans in the stands. But as far as the Raiders in particular, I just think that they're playing with a level of confidence right now. I think that they all went into this 2020 season, third year under John Gruden, under the rebuild that they were doing, and realized that, hey, it's now or never. You know, it's your first year in Las Vegas. You should be a team that expects to make the playoffs. And yeah, there might be some tough games on the road. There might be some tough weather, you know, issues that you got to deal with. The schedule's been really difficult, but why not go win games? Why not go win games? That's what you're there to do. I just feel like this team came into the season this year, especially led by Derek Carr, the quarterback. I think he came into the season with a lot of like he wants to something to prove. Got a chip on his shoulder, and you know, is trying to earn that respect, not just for him but the rest of the team. And right now, man, they're playing with a lot of confidence, even though, like you mentioned, coming off a loss on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Derek Carr and that confidence. I was looking up some stats to prepare, obviously, for this episode and this week. And I noticed on Pro Football Focus, you know, during the first 5 games this season, Derek Carr ranked 26th in the NFL in terms of the percentage of deep throws. And then since the Raiders been on their bye in week 6, he's been 9th highest in terms of percentage of deep throws. And it seems like, at least from my observation, these last couple of games since that bye week, the Raiders' running game has really sort of hit a brand new stride. Is this an offense that kind of starts with the running game and then that allows them to open up maybe some of those big plays through the air?
Oh, absolutely. That's how the Raiders butter their bread, man. It's always by way of the run. You know, Josh Jacobs and Devontae Booker. Normally, I would just talk about Josh Jacobs and say that he's the guy. He's the one that makes everything go. But Devontae Booker has been a nice compliment to him as well. So they got a nice little two-headed monster in that offensive line. And you know very well, offensive linemen, man, they love to block downhill. And so they love to run block. If they can do that, they're going to do it. And the Raiders have, in my opinion, a very good offensive line that's underrated, where most people aren't talking about them. They're not talking about Rodney Hudson, the center. They're not talking about Colton Miller, the left tackle, or whoever's playing the left guard position, because Richie Incognito's been out all year. You know, Gabe Jackson never gets talked about at the right guard position, you know, and then there's been a turnstile there at the right tackle position. But either way, everybody's been able to hold that position down, and they've been able to hold down that offensive line. And so that really allows the run game to get cooking. And then when the run game gets cooking, Derek Carr gets cooking. And I mean, he's playing with such another level of confidence. And you mentioned the deep balls that he wasn't really using early in the season. Well, if you look at some of the games that he had, he really didn't want to check, you know, go deep all the time. He was really just kind of taking what the defense gave him. And that's the beauty of John Gruden's offense. It's set up for the nice West Coast offense, the short passes, you know, the yards after the catch, but then it also allows you to take a couple deep shots in the game as well. And so really starting with that Kansas City Chiefs game week 5, when Henry Ruggs, the rookie, was able to get deep a couple times, and Nelson Aguilar get deep a couple times, you know, it really, you're starting to see them open up things a little bit more moving forward ever since then. And like you mentioned, coming off the bye as well. So this offense right now, man, in my opinion, could play with just about anybody in the league.
And flipping to the other side of the ball, it seems like their defense seems like it's been playing pretty well over the last month, since they've been 3-1 in their last 4 games. They've only been giving up in those three wins. They only gave up an average of 15 points a game. Obviously, they gave up 35 last week to the Chiefs. But for the most part, I thought watching that game kept the Chiefs offense in check until really the final minutes of that game. And do you think this defensive resurgence is going to be the new normal for this Raiders team in the second half of this 2020 season? Or do you sort of attribute it a little bit to maybe it's a bit of a mirage because they've been playing some questionable offenses like the Browns and the Broncos that aren't exactly known for the high-flying offensive attacks? Or is this Raiders defense legit?
I think that the Raiders defense still has a lot of work to be had. You know, I mean, it has its moments. That's the thing. They're not playing consistent. Like the offense, they're cooking with grease right now. They're playing consistent every week. You know, you know what they're going to give you. You know that they're going to go out there. Derek Carr is going to be able to, you know, hit the open receiver and make things happen with his arm. And Josh Jacobs, the company, is going to make things happen with their legs. But the defense, it's like one of those, you just kind of wait to see what defense shows up. And you mentioned that Sunday game against the Chiefs, and they did what they were supposed to do. They got off the field a couple times on third down. They were able to turn Patrick Mahomes over one time. Trayvon Mullen had a nice interception right before halftime. I mean, they were able to make some plays here and there. They just weren't able to do it consistently enough. And the biggest bugaboo for the Raiders defense is the fact that they're struggling to get to the quarterback. They may pressure him a little bit, but they're not getting to him. They're not sacking him. They're not getting him on the ground. I think they're 31st in the league right now in sacks. And so you're not going to be able to live like that, man. You're not going to be able to survive in the NFL like that, because there's just too many good passers, too many good playmakers out there. You've got to make the quarterback uncomfortable. That's going to be a major key for this game coming up on Sunday against Matty Ice and the Falcons as well.
Well, you talk about sacks, and I can't help but notice that the Raiders picked up 2 former Falcons this past week, Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley. Any chance that we're going to see those guys this weekend?
I don't know if they can get out there so quickly, and I'm glad you brought them up, because I was going to ask you about them as well, but I'm not sure if they're even going to be able to get out there and be available as quick as, you know, as that. Vic Beasley was a guy that they picked up on Friday, I believe, and then Tack McKinley, he might even have been a Friday guy as well. But either way you look at it, these guys, they got to figure out the Paul Gunther playbook. Tack McKinley's got to pass the damn physical, apparently. I mean, you know, apparently that's been an issue for him with the past couple teams that he's been on. So I'm not sure if they're going to see him on Sunday or not. I would say that they're probably not going to see him. That would just be my gut feeling. But it'll be interesting, and I'm not too sure what they'd provide even if they get out there, because, well, you know, Vic Beasley hasn't done too much in a while, and especially this year he hasn't done anything. And then, I mean, if Tack McKinley was that good, he'd still be in Atlanta, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. And we'll sort of flip the script here with Q, and we'll get some more insights into the Falcon side of this matchup coming up on today's crossover podcast. But before we get there, guys, I know many of you are dreaming of a white Christmas, but that starts this Thursday at BuiltBar.com. Built Bar has a Black Friday sale beginning on Thursday night, in which they're introducing two new flavors while supplies last. All new white chocolate bars, which includes excellent flavors like white chocolate cookies and cream and white chocolate salted caramel. You already love the regular protein bars at Built Bar that use milk and dark chocolate that are low in calories, low in sugar, high in protein. Why not try their new white chocolate bars? And if that deliciousness isn't enough to entice you, you get two free candy cane brownie bars with every purchase and 25% off all products all weekend long. Just go to BuiltBar.com and get 25% off for Black Friday. Plus, don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to get even more savings. Again, two new white chocolate flavors, a free candy cane brownie bars with every purchase, and 25% off all weekend long at BuiltBar.com.
Joining me now to talk all things Raiders and Falcons is my guy, Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons. You can find him on Twitter at FalcFans. That's FalcFans. And yes, it's the Raiders. It's Falcons. You heard all things Raiders in segment number one. Now you're going to hear all things Falcons. And I really want to start off, Aaron, just talk about the season. Just the fact that the Falcons are 3-7. And look, I know that they found ways to lose multiple games. They've gotten their head coach got fired early on. But I've seen this team put up a bunch of points. You know, I've seen them put up points. I've seen them do really well. It just didn't get the results that they really wanted. So just what's your overall assessment of the team in 2020 as they sit at 3-7?
Yeah, it's been an up and down season, a little too down, if you ask me, and probably most of the city of Atlanta. But, you know, they got off to that slow start. They seemed to get things back on track a little bit once they got rid of Dan Quinn after the week five loss. And it seemed like they were sort of building things. But one of the things that we talked about a lot on Locked On Falcons over the last month, when they went and won 3 out of their last 4 games, was, is this real? Is this the Falcons beating up on maybe some questionable teams like Carolina, like Minnesota? They lost to Detroit. They beat up on Denver, but again, almost lost that game in the final seconds as well. You know, is this team, when they face some of the premium competition that they're going to face, and they're facing a number of teams in the second half of the season, last week with the Saints, they got the Raiders this week, they got the Saints after that, they got Tampa Bay twice, they got Kansas City twice, and, you know, this Chargers team seems to be building themselves up as the year goes on as well to be, a team that's better than maybe their record indicates. And the question was, you know, coming out of their bye week last week, was this team going to be able to elevate its level of play to match the quality of competition? And last week, our answer was no. And it's going to be another question this week, because, again, that's a Raiders team that's, you know, in the thick of the playoff chase and looking at a wild card spot, and has gone toe to toe with arguably what most people consider the best team in the league in Kansas City, and beat them. Without some last second magic from Patrick Mahomes, probably should have beat them on Sunday as well. So it's been an up and down season, because you sometimes you feel like with the Falcons, okay, this team is not very good. But as you mentioned, their offense has been pretty productive for the most part. But one of the things that we've noticed, and this became an issue again on Sunday, and it was an issue earlier in the season, has been like this offense just kind of tanks and craters when Julio Jones is not healthy. And despite having Matt Ryan and Calvin Ridley and Todd Gurley and an up-and-coming offensive line, it just seems like this offense doesn't work when Julio Jones is out of lineup, and he's been dealing with a hamstring injury all year long. He's missed, you know, half of last week's game, or really three quarters of last week's game, and, you know, roughly 2.5 games earlier in the season. And when you look at the offense in those games, they've really struggled, and their defense has been improving, right? But they kind of let Taysom Hill kind of pick them apart to a certain extent in the second half of that game last week, and couldn't really slow down that Saints offense without, you know, their franchise quarterback and Drew Brees. And so, you know, this defense, while relative to the performance of the offense a week ago, was better, but it's not a defense that you can trust. And going up against this Raider team this weekend, you know, I'm not expecting them to be able to shut down as you mentioned and outlined, a pretty solid and all around Raiders unit.
Sticking with the Falcons offense, you mentioned Julio Jones and the fact that he's been dealing with that hamstring injury off and on throughout the course of the year. I know it's early in the week still, but what does your gut tell you about his availability for Sunday? Do you think he's going to give it a go? Do you think he's going to be a no-go, or what's your feeling on him?
Well, the fact that almost immediately after the game, the Falcons coaching staff said he was going to be a game-time decision makes me think that he's not going to go. They kind of know that he's not going to practice this week. They kind of know that it's going to be touch and go. And essentially, them being able to call that out so far in advance, to me, suggests that they're probably going to give him this week off. We'll see if that changes over the course of this week. But my guess is that he will basically be given rest and that hamstring given at least another week to heal.
What has been your opinion of Raheem Morris and the fact that he's the interim head coach right now after Quinn got fired? What has he done different than what Quinn was doing? And what has made him maybe seem like he's given the team a little bit of life that they might not have had under Dan Quinn?
Well, you know, I like Raheem Morris. I think as an individual, as a high character individual, he's done a great job and has been impressive to me. For me, it's one of those things where you look at some of the defensive improvement you've seen, particularly in recent weeks, where the Falcons have been a little bit more aggressive, you know, throwing blitzes at teams in order to generate and manufacture the pass rush that's been, you know, pretty off and on throughout the season. And, you know, I like that element from an X's and O's standpoint. You know, one of the things that people have talked quite a bit about, you know, it's hard for me to put too much stock in these sort of things, but he sort of changed how the team practiced and it's led to at least the belief and the suspicion from a lot of folks that, you know, this team is playing a little bit harder and playing with a little bit more accountability. We didn't really see that this past Sunday. And so you do wonder, is that something that was, you know, a thing from week 6 through week 9 and may not be a thing moving forward. So we'll have to sort of see if this team can sort of respond this weekend, you know, after a pretty disappointing loss to the Saints last week, and whether or not Raheem can get this team up. And I think it's kind of an evaluation for Raheem Morris because, you know, I think it's highly unlikely that he's going to wind up, you know, winning enough games, given the schedule, as I outlined earlier, that he's going to be able to retain the job here in Atlanta. But he's certainly auditioning potentially for another gig elsewhere if he can get this Falcon team, you know, competing at a relatively high level for the remainder of this season. And so I think, you know, this week in particular, coming off of that Saints loss and future weeks, how competitive this team is going to be and how well they respond to some of the adversity that they're definitely going to see for the remainder of the season, I think will be a great indicator of really how good Raheem Morris is as a head coach.
Talking right now with Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons. You can find him on Twitter at FalcFans. That's FalcFans. And what was the deal as far as Taysom Hill was under center for the Saints? It wasn't Drew Brees, and he still had his way with the Falcons defense. How frustrating was that? And what do you think that Taysom Hill had that just messed with the Falcons defense as much as it did?
Yeah, it was one of those things where early on in the game, they were doing a pretty good job containing him. They were, you know, doing a good job on the back end covering guys. And you know, the thing with Taysom Hill that I noticed that I'm curious if other teams will be able to expose for the next at least two games, including one more rematch against the Falcons, before Drew Brees is eligible to come back, is, you know, it seems that he's processing. His processing is a little slow in large part due to that lack of experience being sort of a drop back pocket passer. And we saw that early in the game, but he hit a couple of throws as we got closer to halftime and seemed to get in a rhythm and seemed to get more comfortable. And then the Saints were using him as a runner to get some manufactured runs in the red zone and on some short yardage situations. And he was effective at that. And it was one of those things where I think, you know, Taysom Hill wasn't as impressive watching the game as his numbers would indicate, but he made the plays that he needed to make in order to win that game. And, you know, I think it was just a matter of just a few too many breakdowns on the Falcons end, a few too many mental mistakes, giving up a big play right before halftime that set up a score there, and just not being able to really, you know, win on some of the early downs. One of the comments that Raheem Morris had after the game, which was, you know, he thought that the Falcons won the physical battle for a large portion of the game. And I actually think that's a fair and accurate assessment. It just only really kind of lasted for about a quarter and a half. And then after that point, I don't think the Falcons really won that battle. And I think the Saints offensive line, as well as players like Michael Thomas, and, you know, they had issues with Latavius Murray. You know, they were able to keep Alvin Kamara for the most part in check, but, you know, Latavius Murray was able to make a couple of plays. So I think it was just a matter of Taysom Hill being able to, you know, pick and choose his spots. And with the Saints defense playing as well as it did, he didn't have to do a whole lot in order to win that game, obviously, because the Falcons only scored 9 points and none of them came after the second quarter.
I'm glad you brought up the Saints defense, because Matt Ryan was sacked 8 times on Sunday. How much of that was a factor of the offensive line struggling, and how much of that was just that, the Saints defense?
Well, it's interesting is that when you look at the history of the Falcons and Saints, the Saints seem to always have one game where they dominate the Falcons offensive line. And that's been a pretty consistent trend going back 5 years. Like, they've had, I think in 4 out of the last 5 years, they've had at least one game against the Falcons where they were able to sack Matt Ryan at least 5 times in those games. And then the last time the Falcons played the Saints before this past Sunday, they were able to sack Matt Ryan 9 times. So, you know, I think the Falcons offensive line is not amazing, clearly, with that evidence, with 8 sacks, you can't be a good offensive line and give up that many sacks. But I do think part of it, in addition to some of their struggles, and it was very clear that, you know, guys like Cameron Jordan, Trey Hendrickson, as well as David Onyemata were getting the better of some of their offensive linemen. But I think a lot of those sacks, watching the film, I think were mostly on Matt Ryan holding onto the ball too long and being a little hesitant, pulling the trigger on certain throws, because I think the Saints were able to get some pressure early and sort of speed up his clock. And there were plays where he was playing too fast, and there was plays where he was holding onto the ball too long and playing too slow. And that led to some sacks as well. So I think it's less an indicator that the Falcons offensive line is bad, and more an indicator that just the Saints kind of have their number, and you're going to see one of these games, as we have for like 4 out of the last 5 years, where they just kind of dominate the line of scrimmage and the Falcons really have no answer for them.
Earlier in the show, you mentioned the Raiders acquiring a couple of former Falcons, one in Tack McKinley. He was waived by Atlanta earlier this year. He's been claimed twice. Actually 3 times now. He's been claimed by the Bengals and the 49ers. He failed the physicals with them. The Raiders now have him. What is the deal with the former number 26 overall pick in the 2017 draft? What went wrong with Tack in Atlanta?
I mean, I think the main thing is really the reason why it seems that he's failed these physicals, injuries. You know, and with Tack, you know, he wasn't necessarily coming out. His game wasn't necessarily geared to being a big time sack guy. He was more of a sort of a power rusher, which typically is more of a pressure guy than a guy that's going to generate a ton of sacks, given some of his limitations from a bend standpoint in terms of finishing plays. But he was an effective player his first 3 years in Atlanta, but dealt with some injuries late last season, which prevented him from finishing strong. But from all accounts, you know, dropped weight, was working hard this past offseason. And if you go back and you watch that Week 1 game against Seattle, he's terrorizing that Seahawk offensive line and right tackle Brandon Shell, and had recorded 6 quarterback hits in that game. And then, you know, got off to a pretty good start against Dallas in Week 2, and then dealt with and had a groin injury. And it's all sort of went out the window after that point. And he's struggled to stay healthy in the week since, and it seems like that groin injury is the primary reason why, you know, both the Bengals and 49ers couldn't pass him on their physicals. We'll see if that's going to be the case. And it's one of those things where once he had the groin injury, and Raheem Morris said this right before the Falcons released him, that once his mind was, you know, some maybe frustration from the injury and his mind wasn't necessarily on, you know, football, you know, so he let some of that frustration boil over, you know, went on a little bit of a Twitter tirade against the Falcons, you know, prior to him getting released, after not getting traded at the trade deadline, after sort of reports surfaced the week before that the Falcons were shopping him, and sort of it all kind of fell apart for him in that period of time. And I think, you know, had he been able to stay healthy, you know, we could be talking about a completely different Jack McKinley, who's been, you know, playing at a high level. If he was able to continue what he did in that first game against Seattle for the last, you know, 9-10 weeks, you know, I think a healthy Tack is a player that can add some value to this Raiders defense. May not be a major sack artist, as I said, but certainly a guy that can generate a little bit of more pressure off the edge. But the real big question is, can he stay healthy?
Right, no doubt about that. And what's your thoughts on Vic Beasley? I mean, that's another guy who's a former Falcon. He had a monster season in 2016. He was good in 2019. And the rest of his career, to me, he's been okay, or he's bad. You know, and I feel like the Falcons, when they changed his position or switched up the style that they used him, he started to take a little bit of a downward world spiral. So what were your thoughts on Beasley? He went to Tennessee. That didn't shake out. Now he's in Las Vegas.
Well, I mean, Beasley's an interesting player because, you know, I think in that 2016 season, he had a lot of sack production, led the NFL in 15.5 sacks. But I think a lot of that was due to facing some subpar offensive tackles and feasting on the Ty Sambrelos of the world, who wound up in Atlanta shortly thereafter. And, you know, sort of a level of production that wasn't necessarily repeatable. And we saw some of that regression in 2017. A lot of people blame that on, you know, he was being asked to be more of a linebacker due to some injuries there and be a stand-up rusher in the Falcons. Essentially, we're using him similarly to how the Seattle Seahawks used to use Bruce Irvin as sort of a two-down linebacker, and then on third downs, putting his hand in dirt and rushing the quarterback. And I actually thought that was kind of the better role for Beasley. But then the Falcons kind of were like, no, we're going to try to get Beasley back to being his pass rushing self in 2018, and made him a pure defensive end. And he did not respond well. The Falcons sort of, you know, went all in on Beasley in 2019, with Dan Quinn taking a more of a personal stake in sort of getting him to play better. And he did respond with a better season and a better year than he had the two previous years. But I think really the main issue with Vic Beasley is he's a great athlete, but he's an undersized guy. You know, he's kind of a one-note speed rusher, and his speed rush is not, like, particularly polished or well-developed in terms of his footwork. And, you know, his size makes it hard for him to, you know, disengage against offensive tackles that are often, you know, got 80 pounds of muscle on him. And I think, you know, the best uses of him is sort of being more of that stand-up linebacker and allowing him to use his speed and athleticism to try to make plays in space, whether that's spying mobile quarterbacks, maybe that's covering tight ends. He's shown an ability that he can do that from time to time, rather than asking him strictly to be a pass rusher, because I just think at the end of the day, his ceiling as a pass rusher, despite some of the production he's had, is lower than I think a lot of people really sort of realize. And so I think that's a big reason why it didn't work out in Tennessee, because they were looking for someone to provide that juice off the edge opposite Harold Landry and with Jadeveon Clowney. And I just don't think that's really what Beasley's going to provide. And, you know, I think if that's what the Raiders are looking for him, you know, for the remainder of the season, I think you're going to probably be a little disappointed with that.
Well, it should be interesting. Both Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley, now member of the Silver and Black, after having careers with the Atlanta Falcons. And Beasley, like I mentioned, went on with the Tennessee Titans as well. Very, very interesting to see how those guys enter the fold, if they enter the fold, and what they could do for the Raiders. Final question for you, Aaron, is, you know, a lot of people will just look at the Falcons and they'll just kind of see the 3-7 record and say that, oh, the coach has already been fired. This happened. The Saints have dominated them. This team must stink. But what is the element of this team that the Falcons have that many people would be surprised to know about?
Well, I think, you know, right now, given the question marks surrounding Julio Jones and whether his presence on the offense will impact there, I think really right now the defense does give you a little bit of promise here. You know, we talked about the Raiders offense being predicated on a run. The Falcons' run defense is arguably one of the best performing elements of their team. And then if they can sort of slow down the Raiders running game on those, some of those early downs, and then be able to, you know, dial up those blitzes on some third downs, third and longs and whatnot, I think this Falcons defense could surprise some folks and potentially throw a wrench into this Raiders offense that seems to be clicking on all cylinders at this current point. So I think if there's anything that could surprise this weekend, you know, 'cause I don't think Calvin Ridley or Julio Jones or Matt Ryan sneaking up on anybody from an evaluation standpoint, you know, I think this Falcons defense could, at least in theory, look a little bit better than maybe people are expecting.
So it sounds to me, it sounds to me like the Raiders need to try their best to stay ahead of the chains in this game, because if not, then the Falcons have an opportunity to pin their ears back, and they're able to get after the quarterback if they could do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
There it is. Good stuff right there. Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons. You can find him on Twitter at FalcFans, at FalcFans, and here with me on the Locked On Raiders podcast, Locked On Falcons podcast, as it is crossover week. We're doing it a day early because it's Thanksgiving week, but it should be fun in the NFL. Aaron, great stuff as always, my man. Definitely appreciate you.
Always fun to chat with you, Q, and always enjoy hearing you on Fridays on Locked On NFL. All right, guys, your boy Q. Check him out on Twitter at yourboyq254. Of course, hosting Locked On Raiders and the Friday co-host with Bo Brock of Locked On Cardinals on the Locked On NFL podcast. And guys, as I mentioned earlier in today's episode, yesterday I indicated that, oh, we're only going to do 3 shows this week. No, guess what, guys? I looked at the ad schedule and we got 4 shows to do, right? So it's one of those things where we're going to have a Friday Q&A. So when you guys are sitting down eating that leftover Thanksgiving food, or, you know, you're out there, you know, getting into fights at Walmart on Black Friday, fight for that 64-inch television or whatever that you're trying to get, you'll have a Locked On Falcons podcast to either comfort you as you nurse that black eye from your Black Friday deals, or comfort you as you rub your stomach because you once again have OD'd on tryptophan in the last 24 to 48 hours for the second time. Of course, if you want to send in your questions, of course you can do so via Twitter at Locked On Falcons, via Facebook at Locked On Falcons, and of course you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com as well. So guys, appreciate it. Hope you enjoy your holidays. Stay safe if you're traveling out there. Or stay safe if you're not traveling and you're just, walk into the kitchen to get that stuffing, dressing, whatever you want to call it, whatever the case may be. So hopefully you guys can do that. I don't know. always botching the end of the show. Anyway, until then, guys.